here's a quote to challenge some of your nostrums about Australia's formation, and I hope you'll agree, of deciding that Australian history can sport some truly extraordinary characters. It's not just a feature of older societies. Listen to this from the Sydney newspaper The Empire from August 1859. If Captain James Cook discovered Australia, it said, if John MacArthur planted the first seeds of its extraordinary prosperity, if Ludwig Leichhardt penetrated and explored its before unknown interior, Carolyn Chisholm has done more. She has peopled. She alone has colonised it, in the true sense of the term. Now, I'll bet you think you know something of her, this English philanthropist and archetypal good woman who arrived in Sydney in 1838, but I hope our last guest today will persuade you to step up and understand quite a lot more. Once she arrived, Chisholm was so appalled by the predicament of the colony's young female immigrants that it changed her life course. She ended up establishing the nation's first employment office and extended it to dozens of rural centres. She helped set minimum wages, and she drew up our first employment contracts, and plenty more big reform thinking to come way ahead of her time. She's been named in commemorative plaques and stamps, and she featured on the original $5 note. But the woman who did so much to shape early Australia has largely been forgotten, according to Sarah Goldman, who's just published a new biography entitled Carolyn Chisholm, An Irresistible Force, which aims to put this multi-layered woman, this game changer, back on the map. Sarah, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Hello, Geraldine.
Why is so little known about her, really?
Well, she's in our consciousness at the back. There's an electorate in Melbourne, there's a suburb in Canberra. The name is actually around. But these days, so few people actually know about her. In fact, when I was writing this book, one friend of a friend actually said, oh, yes, I know that name. I think she was headmistress at my daughter's school. But no, I think what happened is obviously time washes over a certain amount. She was also given quite a bad rap in the 70s by the feminists who didn't maybe understand her work.
Yes, just properly. Go to that now. I was going to do that later, but that's a very interesting sidebar to this.
Yes, it is. And I have a lot of respect for the feminists of the 70s, obviously. But in this case, I think they didn't delve far enough. They criticised her for putting women into work, and the bounty immigrants who were poor girls who came from the UK looking for a new life. They criticised her for putting those girls into domestic work and also for wanting them to be married. She saw marriage as useful for them. In effect, what she was giving these girls was more opportunity and more choices in life than they ever had in Britain or here. She organised for them to have jobs on contracts that were never challenged in court. They were written up. They gave them fair wage, fair conditions, etc. And so she actually gave them a choice and more respect than they had ever had. And I think that's something that's ongoing today.
If you can just back off that mic just a tiny bit, thanks. And also, as I understand from your book, the thing about this, the 70s feminists, people like Anne Summers and so on, thought that she had a view about women being a civilising agent, that the whole business about marriage and settling and so on would settle the colony, and that this was not in keeping with the idea that women would be expected to play that role. Now, how do you answer that?
Okay. Caroline did talk about God's police as the women and little children, but it needs to be taken into full context. Caroline also said that the men did not actually necessarily need a civilising agent as such. She wrote in 1847 to the then colonial secretary, Earl Grey, the son of the tea man, actually.
Oh, yes.
And she said that she had travelled across the outback of New South Wales, which she had done for a number of years. She'd met thousands of people. And she said that what she'd learned is that the emancipists, i.e. the ones who had been convicts and now turned out, particularly the men, were themselves, and the ones who had maybe suffered in the hellholes of Norfolk Island and such like, had actually turned themselves into good, decent people, good, decent men, and they weren't rough. They were trying to make the best of life. So her supposition is that all people had goodness in them, not just women needing to do so.
Look, we've had such a response to our... Last week we looked at different attitudes to, say, the frontier wars and just bringing refreshed, I suppose, attitudes to our history, which we get in little bite-sized sort of somewhat clinical chunks. So I suppose that's what you're trying to do here now. When Caroline does arrive as a 20-something wife of a military man, a man who worked for the East India Company in 1838, what kind of world did she step into on her arrival?
Well, it was a very fractious society. There were the emancipists, the free settlers who were wanting to be the exclusiveness. There was the military and the convicts. There was also a time, there had been a boom time, but it was a bust time. The economy was bad. There was a drought, a seven-year drought, just beginning. And also Britain had fallen into some depression, so there was not as much money coming back and they were calling back loans. And at that time, it coincided, it was a perfect storm, as these things often are, with thousands of bounty people, particularly women, being brought into Australia. Now, the bounty women were the women who, they wanted more women into the colony because it was about 2-to-1 to men. And there were poor girls who were, the ship's captains were paid about £15 each for each one that arrived. But there was no work for them. There was no accommodation. They had 10 days on their boat and they were kicked ashore. And, of course, in those days, there's no such thing as any government safety nets.
Well, they arrived on their own. They were just... They were completely at the mercy of the society and all the various predators, to be frank. We're talking about predators this week with Harvey Weinstein, my goodness. She started going down to the dockside and greeting people. And she made representation to the governor for a home for these girls because she realised how totally unprotected they were.
Correct. And she also brought in, she saw the governor and she eventually had him on side. But she also went to the newspapers at that stage, John Fairfax, the original one, and Charles Kemp had just bought what would become the Sydney Morning Herald. And it was unusual again for a woman in the 19th century to be that public. She'd asked other friends to go with her. They wouldn't because they thought that was too outrageous for a woman to front up. So she organised, eventually they organised the home. She took the girls undercover. And as you said, there were predators. There was, some girls were just starving and they were selling the only thing they had. Mm-hmm. And so were turning to prostitution just to live. So she took them in and she found jobs for them.
And she effectively set up the first employment agency in the nation, didn't
exactly,
she?
Exactly, a not-for-profit employment agency, in fact.
And wrote what could see as a precursor to a sort of awards.
Exactly. And, I mean, years and years before, there was not even incipient union rights for men, let alone for women in those days. And, yes, she did, and they were written in triplicate, one for the employee, one for the employer, and one she kept. And she wrote more than 2,000 and not one was challenged in a court of law.
Now, just because I'm looking at the time, we could go on a long time, but we won't. There is one very interesting anomaly. She seems to have outsourced, dare I say, her children, her own children. So while she was doing this truly remarkable, systematic, ongoing work, getting money from people who were moneyed to support these people, setting up, you know, very much the beginnings of a welfare system, her own children, three young boys, aged 5, 4, and 2, were sort of dealt with by a nanny back in Windsor. And she did have regrets later that the children were sidelined with all this charity activity.
She did have some regrets, but she was very much a 19th century woman in that respect. She actually had 8 children altogether. Only 4 survived her. 2 died shortly after birth. When she was in England, Charles Dickens, came along and she wrote for him, and he actually used her as in Bleak House as Mrs. Jellyby. And he actually criticised her. He was very much in favour of her philanthropic work, but he criticised her because she didn't take much notice of her children. And but he was being very 19th century male at that stage, because the women he admired were women who were very wealthy and had were able to actually outsource quite successfully their children, where Caroline didn't have those didn't have the resources to do that. But she also at one stage took her children out of school so that she had the money for the immigration.
The boys out of school.
Yeah, which is difficult for us to believe, but we're looking at it as 21st century mothers as opposed to a 19th century woman who was totally driven.
Okay, we'll leave people thinking about that little paradox. So she eventually helped around 11,000 people settle in Australia. And just looking, we've really got about a minute. She does eventually go back to England, and she's pretty poverty-stricken. You must talk quickly about her husband before we go.
Her husband was a remarkable man, particularly in the 19th century. It was more of a partnership that we understand. He was not particularly good with money. He was fairly useless, actually. And she was, and they were poverty stricken. I guess, if I may just very quickly say, the one thing that we need to say about her is that she talked about multiculturalism before it happened. She talked about wonderful things. As well, and he did support us.
Go to your book. All right, Sarah, but that's an incredible sort of effort to summarise this really remarkable woman. You've certainly persuaded me. Carolyn Chisholm, An Irresistible Force. Sarah Goldman is the writer, and thank you very much indeed, Sarah.
Thank you, Geraldine.
Thank you for your time today. HarperCollins is the publisher too. Thanks to the Saturday Extra team, all of them, and I will be back next week. Blueprint for Living coming up. It's 9 o'clock.